නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So last time actually we have completed Bahudhatuka Sutta, which we have spent about several weeks, I think 4 weeks or 5 weeks, and now I thought of starting a new sutta, which is also related to the practice actually. Now, probably you have heard about how we are starting the practice. Is basically hear about it. Probably we start, get some message about it, and then we approach someone, and then we start having a kind of a conversation, and then we get to know some more details, and we also develop some amount of confidence, and then we ourselves want to verify, or we ourselves want to experience what is explained in the Dhamma, explained in the teaching. So very much like the Dhamma has very mentioned in its qualities, so there's a kind of an invitation for us to come and see, come and verify, to come and put it into practice and see whether it is also working for us. So we are going through certain probably bodily pains, maybe mental despair, and is the Dhamma helping us? Is the Dhamma is capable of giving us some remedy? So there is always kind of an invitation to come and see, to put it into practice and see for ourselves. Now, while we are doing such activity, so we can say the process is very much like little bit of trial and error, because we can't say that the immediately we may find the exact path. So we also go astray, and sometimes we have to shift ourselves again, come back to the correct path. Again, we might have to consult another Kalyanamitta. So likewise, the path is also little shaky at some times, but there is certain direct instructions mentioned by the Buddha, and those are somewhat streamlined towards the faculties, then the spiritual powers, then enlightenment factors, and the Noble Eightfold Path. Sometimes we call them as the 37 Bodhipakkhya Dhammas, starting with the four foundations of mindfulness. So these are somewhat mentioned in this particular sutta, what I have selected today. So it is called Kundaliya Sutta. Kundaliya Sutta, which is available in the Bojjhanga Samyutta. So Bojjhanga Samyutta is available in the Samyutta Nikaya, Connected Discourses of the Buddha, where many discourses related to a particular theme, particular topic is gathered together and compiled. So this Kundaliya Sutta is also something available there. So Buddha particularly explains about the path to a wanderer called Kundaliya. So at this occasion, Buddha was dwelling at Saketa in the deer park at Anjana Grove. So that's the area it is mentioned, where the area is called Saketa, and the place is called Anjana Grove. And one wanderer called Kundaliya approached the Blessed One. So different contemporary practitioners were there during the Buddha's time, and some are called the Brahmins. Actually, that is the large group, the Brahmins, and they are talking about their own Upanishads, different beliefs. But certain others do not want to believe that, so they have taken different paths. One large group is called the Samanas. Actually, Buddha comes under that category, Samana. That's why sometimes those other religious groups address the Buddha as Samana Gotama. So Buddha comes under that group called Samana. But not only that, there are other various groups. Another group is called this Paribhajaka. So Paribhajakas are wanderers. They didn't have any particular kind of practice, but they are skilled in debating, they are skilled in various philosophical aspects, dogmatic philosophies, theories, and their tradition was to spend some time debating with others and trying to convince others, defeat others. In case they being defeated, they become a student of that particular teacher, that particular person who was capable of defeating himself, defeating them. So likewise, the tradition was very much like based on the debates, discussions, meetings, and there are different places even devoted for such activity, and at different locations certain meeting halls are established so that these wanderers come there and they start kind of a discussion, they start going through a kind of a debate, and then some are converted to another faith. So likewise, these wanderers are another group available during the Buddha's time. Kundaliya belongs to one of that group. So they are also independent. It is not necessary to be a follower of a particular person, a teacher, but there are some independent wanderers as well. Kundaliya seems to be such person. So he approached the Buddha. So while Buddha was dwelling at Saketa, so this Kundaliya approached the Buddha and had the greetings with him. And after that cordial talk, so he sat down to one side and mentioned about his way of living. Master Gotama, I am one who stays around monastic parks and frequents assemblies. After the meal, when I have finished my breakfast, it is my custom to roam and wander from park to park, from garden to garden. So this is the kind of way that he lived. So there are different other groups are always having some discussion, a debate at certain garden, certain park. So this fellow approached there, he started listening to them and analyzing what they are talking, thinking what they are talking. So this is his way of living. He's also a wanderer. Now, there he mentioned that when he was working like that, behaving like that, so sometimes he says certain ascetics or certain Brahmins engage in discussions and they are trying to very much like defend their belief and to condemn the others' beliefs. So that is how they are doing the debate. So strongly grasping whatever they believe, trying to condemn the others' beliefs. So this is how they were doing. So this wanderer Kundaliya approached those assemblies and he started seeing them, these debates, listening to these debates. Now, after coming to the Buddha, he is asking a question. But what is the benefit that Master Gotama lives for? Now he is talking to the Buddha. He is asking, so what is the benefit that the Buddha is living for? By living, what are you feeling? What are you trying to acquire? What is your final aim? And then Buddha gives the answer. Vijja vimutti palani sanso ko kundaliya tathagato viharati. So vijja vimutti palani sanso. Kundaliya tathagata lives for the benefit and fruit of true knowledge and liberation. True knowledge and liberation. So this we get few terms here. So Buddha give a direct answer telling the Buddha lives getting the benefit of or the fruit of true knowledge and liberation. Vijja vimutti. So vijja and vimutti are the phala. Vijja and vimutti are the fruits. They are the results. And then Kundaliya wants to ask another question. So he is asking. But Master Gotama, what things when developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and liberation? Now he is asking the question, so in order to get these fruits, vimutti and so this vijja and vimutti, so what needs to be practiced? Katame pana bhogotama dhamma bhavita bahuli kata vijja vimuttiṃ paripurentiti. So what are the kinds of dhammas, causes you need to develop in order to get the fruits of vijja and vimutti? That is the knowledge and liberation. Now, then Buddha say, Sattako kundaliya bojjanga, bhavita bahuli kata, vijjaya muttim paripurenti. So you need to develop the enlightenment factors, then only you will be able to get the fruits as vijja and vimutti. And then he is asking the next section. He is asking, katam pana bho gotama dhamma bhavita bahuli kata satta bojjhange paripurenti. Now, in order to develop the seven enlightenment factors, what needs to be practiced? And then Buddha is explaining, for establishment of mindfulness, the four satipatthanas. So those are the prerequisite to have the seven enlightenment factors. Chattaro kundaliya satipatthana bhavita bahuli kata satta bojjange paripurenti. One has to develop the four foundations of mindfulness, then only one would be able to develop the seven enlightenment factors. Now Kundali is asking the next question. Now we can understand the procedure. Now he is asking the next question. Katame pana bho gotama dhamma bhavita bahuli kata chattaro satipatthane paripurenti. Now, what types of activities, practices that you need to develop in order to fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness? And then Buddha say, Tiniko kundaliya sucharitani, bhavitani bahuli katani, chattaro satipatthani paripurenti. You need to develop three kinds of good conduct. So three kinds of good conduct is the base for you to develop the four foundations of mindfulness. Now he is asking the next question. Katame pana bho gotama dhamma bhavita bahuli kata tini sucharitani paripurenti. So what needs to be practiced in order to have these three kinds of good conduct? Master Gotama, what things when developed and cultivated fulfill the three kinds of good conduct? And then Buddha mentioned, Indriya Sangvaro ko kundaliya bhavito bahuli kato tini sucharitani paripurenti. Restraint of these faculties, the sense faculties. So that is the prerequisite, that is the base for you to cultivate three kinds of good conduct. Now, till this moment, actually, the Kundalini is asking one after the other different questions, and Buddha comes from the very topmost point to the fairly, we can say, the ground level, very basic, elementary kind of a practice. Now, immediately, if Buddha explains the very, say, profound teaching to Kundaliya, probably he is unable to understand it. Now, anyway, gradually, Kundaliya himself is asking one after the other various questions. Now, Buddha takes him to the very practical ground, telling that the restraint, the sense restraint, the faculties are to be restrained. So, that should be the kind of a ground to develop the next level. Now, at that moment, rather than Kundalini is asking another question, now Buddha turns the question to him. Now he starts explaining to Kundalini. Khatamam bhavito chako bhavito cha kundaliya indriya sangvaro katham bahuli kato tini sucharitani paripurenti. Now he is going to explain how one needs to develop the sense restraint. Now that seems to be the kind of a ground mentioned here, but anyway we'll see certain other suttas in the future to get some other perspective about this kind of a sutta. But for the time being we can see very much like the beginning point, the base explained in this particular sutta is the sense restraint. So we'll see how Buddha is mentioning about it. Ida kundaliya bhikkhu chakkhuna rupan disva manapang nabhijjati. Nabi hansati naragan janeti tassa thithocha khayo hoti thithan chittang Ajjattang susantitang suvimuttang. How Kundaliya is restrained of the sense faculties developed and cultivated. So now Buddha is trying to explain. Here, Kundalini, having seen an agreeable form with the eye, a bhikkhu does not long for it, or become excited by it, or generate lust for it. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. Now, this is talking about the positive side. Now, we are now coming to a kind of a basic practice. So, if you want to have very sublime results, so here the ground is very much like you have to restrain the faculties. We know that we are eager to look at beautiful sights, and some people go from one place to another place, even go abroad. We call it tourism, and in order to enjoy. So basically that is what people are looking forward. So rather than simply being at home or quiet, so they prefer going to another country, going to another place to satisfy the senses. So look for different things, some exciting kind of shows. So all these different things are there, and people even build such things, such places, so that the others come and start seeing those and start enjoying it. Now here, talking about the eye. So the eye is one faculty, the rupa, the forms are the other side, the external faculty. Through the eyes we can see many things. Now in this occasion, first Buddha explains about the positive side. So through the eye you can see a beautiful thing, something you are like to see, something pleasing. So typically what happens, once we see something pleasing, so we being naturally attracted towards it. So there's a tendency in our mind, so whenever we see a beautiful, attractive form, even without our knowledge, mind being attracted towards that. So then, probably we are tempted to go closer and even to touch it, to taste it, whatever, and go forward. On the other hand, mind also get involved there. So we start getting more and more information, what we call the nimitti. So various signs, we start getting more signs, and we start even thinking about it. And now the mind is fully engaged there, thinking various aspects of what we see. And there's a certain amount of enthusiasm, there's a certain amount of craving is now involved in this activity. So what we call the mind is very much involved there now, engaged there now, infatuated there now, fully coupled there, fully engaged there, well established there. And certain amount of raga, certain amount of say lust or craving is also developed. And what we call as the raga anusaya, the latent tendency to lust, also developed. And we continue to do that. So that's what we are thinking as the enjoyment. We have some healthy eyes and there are beautiful sights. So why not enjoy it? So we keep on enjoying and completely bewildered, and sometimes completely even go to the indulgence, enjoyment. Now nowadays it's very easy because your phone has all the necessary videos, and you have the television at your home and everything is there. You can switch it on and see everything. Your laptop or the computer also has the connection. Now everything is possible to immediately look at. So it's quite easy to enjoy the senses. Unlike the past days, you don't need to even physically go there. Now you can, while being at home, you can completely enjoy, completely indulge in this kind of a pleasure. And you might even spend hours browsing, enjoying, going through the YouTube, and you don't even notice the time. So likewise, fully involved there, fully engaged there. And so we can see how the typical person, a worldly person, knowingly or unknowingly, captured by this typical trend. So we are tempted towards those sights and we start enjoying it. And basically we lose the time and we lose our balance, and mind go through various fluctuations up and down, and accordingly your body also start moving. And it's very much like a mind-made world. An imaginary world also can be prepared if it is a kind of a drama or a kind of a film if you are watching. So all these different scenarios are possible. Now the practitioner, on the other hand, so what Buddha is talking about the practitioner. So the practitioner does the something different or even something difficult. Rupan disva manapang na bhijjati. So he doesn't have a kind of a desire for it. He is not making a desire for it. Anyway, he is seeing it, maybe accidentally or purposely he is seeing it, but there is no kind of a longing for it, a strong attraction towards it. He is capable of keeping himself fairly calm, steady. Nabijjati, nabihansati. So there is no kind of an excitement by that. So people want the excitement, they like the excitement. Otherwise they feel bored. They are telling I am bored. So that's why they prefer excitement. So they are going after, looking after the excitement. But this person, for another person, this is an exciting sight. But the practitioner, he is going through a kind of a mild way. Not really exciting. Even though the drama or the film is so exciting, this person, the practitioner, is capable of keeping himself fairly steady. That's kind of a different way of looking at it. Even though sights are there, so the practitioner doesn't seem excited. And na raga janeti, and his mind there is no lust. So that's a beautiful thing. Even though the eyes can see, mind doesn't have lust, mind doesn't have craving, mind doesn't have desire. And tassa thithocha kayo hoti, the body remains calm, fairly steady, and the mind also, chittang ajjattang susantitang, mind also well established, well composed, and well liberated. Liberated in the sense, it is not indulging with what he see, it is not particularly involved with what he see, rather it is taken care of its health. Even though the sights are there, the seeing is happening, mind remains uninvolved. Now probably you might can't do it immediately, so there may be situations that we being attracted and we feel enthusiastic and we want to further go and look at it, enjoy it. All these tendencies are there. But later, as we can see through the practice, these tendencies start weakening. So the practitioner becomes capable of doing this, what Buddha is talking. At the beginning, it is very much like a kind of a effortful restrainment. Because mind is asking, the senses are also well operating, but you are trying to control. You are trying to restrain. It's a purposeful restrainment. Sometimes feels like we are not giving the freedom to the mind or the body or the faculties. We are very much like blocking them. So that's why it's called Indriya Sangvara. Sort of a restrainment of the faculties. It's a practice, it's a morality, moral practice. Now, by the way, why are we doing it? So, when others are trying to enjoy as much as possible, so why certain group does not want to do that? So, the problem does not lie with the faculty itself, the problem lies at the mind. Because what you see does not remain in the eye, rather it triggers the mind, it basically even pollutes the mind, and whatever the experience that you have acquired, what you have gone through, ultimately can make a kind of a lasting disturbance to the mind. it can even improve or increase the tendencies already available in the mind. Now suppose we have already acquired kind of a craving, lustful quality in the mind that is being further strengthened, further enhanced because of this kind of activity. It's already conditioned. The minds are already conditioned, already polluted, already kind of tendencies are there towards the craving. Now that tendency, that trait is further and further highlighted, reinforced when we are ignorantly allowing the eye to further involve in such kind of an activity. Knowing that, one has to do a purposeful restrainment. Appear like difficult. That's why in certain suttas, Buddha mentioned, even like you are crying, try to do it. Because mind is asking, mind is yearning for that, but you are doing some sort of a restrainment. It's not easy at the beginning, because the practice itself does not bring you enough happiness. And what is available happiness is this very gross, low kind of sensual happiness. But now you are trying to restrain that also. Mind start rebelling it. So basically it's very difficult. But anyway, little by little, we have to try that. And on the other side, Buddha mentioned here, Chakkunākopaneva rūpandiswa amanāpaṁ. Now the other side. So when you see something, there could be even a bad side happen. What you see is not agreeable, but kind of a disagreeable thing. And so what the practitioner would typically do is that na manku hoti appatitti citto adina manaso abhyapanna chetaso tassatito cha khayo hoti titan cittang ajjattan susantitang suimuttang. So this is the practitioner. So now we'll first take the typical person. So he sees something bad, he sees something disagreeable, and he feels unhappy, frustrated, and even he feels agitated, and he starts complaining, he starts cursing the others, blaming the others, condemning the others, and mind feels completely confused, and he becomes even resentful, has some kind of aversion. All these possibilities are there. Mind is fully colored now, fully conditioned, fully polluted. But the practitioner instead doing something different. So, na manku hoti. So, even though he sees something disagreeable, his mind is not dismayed by it. And appatittita citto. So the basically the term is appatittina citto. Not the appatittitena citto, rather appatittina citto. That means, so he doesn't, his mind does not become daunted by it. And again, adina manaso, not dejected. And abhyapanna chetaso, does not have any ill will. Tassa thitocha kayo hoti. So the body remains calm, steady, and tithang chittang, the mind also steady, ajjattan susantitang, well established, and suvimuttang, it's also very much not engaged, rather liberated. Now this is also not easy thing. You know that the typical person easily get agitated, easily feels kind of threatened on this kind of a disagreeable situation. He start panicking. So all these different mental agitation is possible. But the practitioner on the other hand, even though he see something disagreeable, he was able to maintain kind of a quietude, mental stability and bodily stability as well. Now you can see even Buddha mentioned here some bodily stability. Because when you are being frightened,
your body is also not that steady. The frightening, the fears are quite capable. It's instantly these are happening. But as we can see from the statements here, when one is maturing in the practice, even the body becomes stable. He does not panic. He doesn't immediately rush for some activity. Rather, he is capable of looking at it in a composed way, without acting impulsively. You know that one of the benefit of the mindfulness practice is that you are, rather than impulsively reacting, you become more steady, more calm, composed, rather than immediately acting, reacting. Now you have more opportunity to look at the possibilities, to weigh the possibilities, and then get the proper decision. That decision is also coming through a kind of a silent background, silent mind, very quiet mind, rather than an agitated mind, excited mind. So the message given here is how to maintain such kind of a restraint. Now we are simply talking here about the eye, the faculty of eye. And then further Buddha explained manapa amanapesu. So there's a combination, manapa and amanapa, agreeable and disagreeable. Both are there. And there also Buddha mentioned body is steady, mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. And there are situations that some are behaving well, some are behaving disagreeable ways, and we have some mixed feelings. There also the mind remains in a more composed way. Ajjattan susantitan suvimuttam. Now, so this is, even though we say easily, so this is not an easy thing to do, that we all know. So it is true that we have to maintain some sort of a restrainment of the faculties, and that restrainment alone can't do the whole thing, but the mind has to have a fair amount of maturity to do that. So it's a mere moralistic approach might not be able to do that. Say for example, you know that the particular place is little difficult and you can't handle it, and you can avoid going there. That's one way of handling it. You don't want to go there because you know that it's a dangerous place. It's giving some excitement, or it is more attractive, or it is giving some disturbance to your practice. And so you are altogether cutting it off. You are altogether preventing it. So that is one possibility. That's also recommended sometimes to the beginners. Basically, one approach of the sampajanya. So the sampajanya, the clear comprehension, has four aspects according to the commentary. The sattaka sampajanya, sappaya sampajanya, gochara sampajanya, asammoha sampajanya. Sattaka sampajanya. So you do a kind of a pre-analysis. So what is the gain? What is the real meaning of what I am going to do? So you do a little bit of an analysis. So you are reflecting about the meaning, the benefit, sattaka sampajanya. And then the sappaya sampajanya. Is it suitable for me to do it? Now I am doing something like this, and is it suitable for me to my practice? So you do another reflection. Then gochara sampajanya. So if you have to do it, so how to get some benefit towards my practice? So is it possible to practice kayanupassana while doing it? Is it possible to practice chittanupassana while engage with it? So likewise, you do another way of looking at it. And then the asammoha sampajanya, so it's going even further. While you are doing that activity, is it possible for me to continue it without making a self? Allowing things to happen as a cause and effect way without making a self. So you are going to another level. And continuing, or rather considering like that, either you want to drop it, either you want to continue it or implement it. So that is also recommended. But here, on the other hand, in this restraint, it is not that you are completely preventing the situation, avoiding the situation. Rather, somehow, due to some reason, you have to engage with it. You have to go through it. So while you are going through it, how the mind is now being involved? If you are having some kind of a favorable, agreeable situation, are you feel excited? Are you feel elated? Is your body feel really exciting? Your heart vibration increased? And many other body related excitement has happened. Now that means you being fully involved. You are not steady. The mind and the body are fully captured by the situation. But on the other hand, if we are able to maintain the calmness, body stability and the mind stability, irrespective of the situation is agreeable or disagreeable or mixture of it, so that indicates fair maturity. It is not the fair restraint that we are talking here. Actually, the typical restraint is that we are trying to avoid getting any kind of a sign. So that is also sometimes Buddha mentioned. Chakkhuna rupan disva na nimittaggahi, nanu byanjanaggahi. Yattvadikarana metan chakkhuindriyang asangutang viharantang abhijjadomanasa anvasayung tasa sangvaraya patipajjati rakkati chakkhuindriyang. Chakkhuindriya sangvarang apajjati. So likewise Buddha mentioned, so when the eye is involved, so there is a possibility of getting little signs and further get involved. As a result of that, various covetousness, greed, maybe even ill will, all those defilements can produced. So you are behaving in a way to minimize it, to avoid it. Probably you are not going there, you are not looking at it. You are avoiding watching the TV, avoiding watching the YouTube. So that is also possible. But here the other scenario is, if you have to look at it, if you are seeing it now, so what should be the way the mind would behave? So that is difficult actually. Rather than altogether avoiding, due to some reason you have to see it, you couldn't avoid it. Now how the mind has to behave? So if it is the positive side, the agreeable side, we need to see, is there any longing for it? Is there any desire for it? You want to see and see more, you want to see another one. Or you are not having such kind of a greedy kind of a behavior. And you are not being excited. It may be a really thrilled thing, it may be a really beautiful thing, but you are not being excited by it. And you are not generating any lust towards it. That is for the positive thought. On to the other hand, the negative one, the disagreeable one, you are again not dismayed by it, not daunted by it, not dejected by it, and still not making any ill will. You are able to bear it, you are able to cope up with it. And mind remain steady, body also remains steady, well composed. And if you are getting the kind of both sides, mixture of agreeable and disagreeable, situation is also same. Mind remain calm, the body remain calm, steady, inward, well composed and well liberated. Now Buddha repeats the same thing for the ear, for the nose, for the tongue and to the body and even to the mind. Say for example to the mind, cognize mental phenomena with the mind. So and still his body remains steady, the mind also remains steady, inwardly composed, well liberated. And then Buddha summarizes telling, evam bhavitoko kundaliya indriya sangvaro evam bahulikato tini sucharitani paripurenti. So if you are able to practice the sense restraint like this, it will cause to fulfill the three kinds of good conduct. So the message is, so it is not finished there itself. So the sense restraint is not the last thing. Based on the sense restraint, now you are not doing anything bad, anything wrong, anything unwholesome. instead you are doing only the positive, correct, wholesome activities. You are still doing the wholesome activities, by the way. You are not being inactive. Sometimes people take the extreme thinking, okay, you are not supposed to do anything. You are supposed to restrain your faculties, be like a dumb, be like a deaf, be like a blind, don't do anything. So that is going to another extreme, kind of even going to the level of self-mortification, not giving anything. You are like punishing yourself. But that is also not the approach taken. Rather, Buddha has given the freedom to do what is correct. So the development is there. It fulfills the three kinds of good conduct. So the good bodily conduct, good verbal conduct, good mental conduct is still continued. But you have the capacity to distinctly know what is correct and what is incorrect. Probably you can use certain amount of Sammāditti towards that. Already we discussed the Sammāditti Sutta. So there are Venerable Sāriputta mentioned, okay, the very, say, fundamental kind of Sammāditti, kusalañca pajānāti, akusalañca pajānāti, kusala mūlañca pajānāti, akusala mūlañca pajānāti. You know what is wholesome, you know what is unwholesome, you know what are the wholesome roots, you know what are the unwholesome roots. So that is kind of already available knowledge to you, kammasagata sammāditti. So the knowledge about what is good and what is wrong. And now you select what is only the correct, what is wholesome, and you continue to do that. Then it becomes bodily good conduct, verbal good conduct, mental good conduct. So the conduct is very much like purified. So it is not that you are being completely inactive and defeated and lethargic. Rather, you have a kind of a criteria. Okay, this is the way I have to behave. You maintain certain kind of a composed mental attitude. Sense faculties are also restrained. Continue to do the good side. Okay, I think that is enough for today, and we'll continue the other parts next week, because this sutta go one after the other. Today I'd like to emphasize on this sense restraint side. So with that, I'll conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. Any questions on your side, Bhante? We haven't received anything
here
yet.
No, everybody restrained.
Saranai Bhante, I really enjoy listening to the talk. And one of the things what I learned in the past as well, this discussion basically talked about how to restrain. The basic practice, the framework of this practice, talk about moral and ethical and all those conducts, how we have to sort of obey and try to restrain. And sometimes what I have seen, what I have experienced in day-to-day life, we sometimes forget on today's aspect, and today's discussion basically emphasizes the same, how well that we need to sort of obey and try to be mindful. I think one other aspect also what I learned from today, or maybe it will be a question for you as well, rather than my understanding is accurate, when certain individuals see this, that the conduct has to sort of be done, and when their state of mind develops, the reaction to certain events have to be naturally sort of tamed, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is true. That's why actually we can see some two aspects here. So one aspect is that typically Buddha mentioned chakkhuna rupan disva na nimittak gahi nanu byanjanak gahi. So when you see something, you are not trying to pick any of the signs, you are trying to look at something different, you are maybe even closing your eyes, you are not going there. So it's a kind of a escape in a way, you are trying to escape the situation. But here in today's sutta, it is not that you are escaping, you go through it. While you are going through it, you are capable of maintaining a kind of a restrained mind. Even though I see the thing, see the beautiful sights, the mind remains calm. Mind is not excited. Mind is not agitated. Similarly, even though I see the disagreeable objects, disagreeable forms, disagreeable sights, still the mind remain calm, mind remain silent. Again, when the eye sees some mixture of things, agreeable, disagreeable, both, mixture of them, still the mind remain calm, still the mind remain liberated. So this is not easy actually. So you can't predict this to immediately to a beginner. Okay, you look at everything, you go through the YouTube, you watch the movies, try to maintain the mind liberated, so that is impossible. Because the tendencies are there in the mind to immediately get attracted towards the lustful scenes, towards the beautiful scenes. That's the natural instinct that we are having. Because the mind is get used to it, mind is so conditioned towards it. And that's why we have to have some sort of a little bit of restraint at the faculties, not to look at too many things, because already the mind is conditioned, already the mind is polluted. Actually, I can remember one venerable Kadavadvi Jinnavansa Thero giving a very beautiful simile here. So he is telling, assume that you are going through a river by a little boat, and in the middle of the river there is a water leak. You find there's a water leak, there's a little hole. Through that, the water start coming in. So one approach is to take a bucket and try to remove the water. As much as possible, you are removing the water. That is also a kind of a solution. Another solution is, you are trying to stop coming in. You are trying to avoid the water coming in. And at the same time, you are trying to remove what is available, already come through. I think that is the second solution is the most appropriate one, because even though you keep unloading things, keep removing things, if things are further and further coming in, so it's a never ending process, because you haven't stopped the leak. The leak is continuing, the water seeping through again and again. You didn't take any action towards that. So the first thing is therefore to stop it coming in. So similarly, because of our unrestrained behavior, already the mind has gone through some kind of a bad tendency. It has already gone towards the wrong path. And as a result of that, fair amount of confused mind, fair amount of conditioned, colored mind is what we have gained. It's already going through a lot of proliferation. It has a lot of bad tendencies, already polluted, already conditioned. Now, if we further condition it, if we further pollute it, by looking at various other kind of disturbing things, then it is never-ending process. So that is where we have to have some sort of a restraint. Okay, you do a little bit of censoring. Do not look at these things. Do not enjoy these kind of activities. So it will further condition the mind. It will further pollute the mind. So you have your common sense, and trying to minimize the further impact coming towards the mind. And in that way, the sense restraint become more and more useful, more and more meaningful, because you know that the mind has already gone through some unrestrained behavior. As a result of that, it has all these repercussions, consequences, and now you are trying to minimize it by not further giving it. And if it is unavoidable, later probably you can see how the mind is behaving. Now, say for example, while you have the previous kind of a behavior, restrainment, you further continue the satipatthana, further continue the vipassana, you are starting being matured about the situation, so you are gaining certain amount of a skill. But now the approach can be little flexible. Doesn't mean that you give a license back to the mind to look at all the unnecessary things. In case you have to look at it, now you can see how the mind is behaving. Is it the old fashion that the mind is behaving, old habitual way the mind is behaving, or is it having some sort of a sense restraint? It is not a forceful sense restraint, but the mind is very much like capable of maintaining it. Rather than being polluted, is it capable of maintaining its self-care? It's a kind of a self-care process. So even though beautiful sights are there, you are not longing for it. You are not feeling excited by it. Mind is capable of maintaining its stability. The body also maintaining its stability. Even though the sights are really alarming, disturbing, still the mind is capable of maintaining it, keeping it stable. So this is the second scenario, is more to a mature person who has some already developed faculties.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. I totally sort of see that. There are certain times when I see certain things, previously how my thoughts get entangled, now the similar kind of thoughts doesn't get entangled if I see, but yet I have noticed if I want to entangle it, then I can with the same picture or same scene that I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
Whether to entangle it or not to entangle it. So, I totally agree. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dhanwan Saranai.
Yeah, Dhanwan Saranai.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. There's a written question here.
Yeah.
It says, respected Bhante, regarding the mind faculty, can you please translate literally Manasa Dhamman Vinyana Manapam? My question refers to the difference between the terms mano, mental, and vinyana, mind. Mano needs to be restrained by vinyana or by citta. What are those different minds or levels of minds or dimensions of mind? Mano, citta, vinyana, thank you very much.
Yeah. So the vinyana is the most primitive form, most fundamental form. Now, chakkuñca paticca rūpeca upajjati chakkuññānam. So this is the very elementary level that the, according to the Dhamma, the vinyana. So not yet it is polluted. It is a mere knowing part, mere cognition part. When I and the form comes together, so the I consciousness happened. It is happening even to the Buddha. So very primary kind of a consciousness. Just mere seeing. And then the hearing also same. Smelling, tasting, touching also same. But the citta typically comes when you add a little bit of your own stuff. The citta part. So now you put your hand, now you add your own likes and dislikes. You start recognizing, you start going through some feelings, and as a result of now, little bit of coloring is added. That is what we call as a citta. And the mano typically means it has gone further. Now intentionally something is there. So intentional involvement is there. So now the mano duccharita, mano sucharita, all these are there because the mind has become fully conditioned, fully intentionally involved in the activity. So it has the capacity to produce karma. So that is the more gross way the mana is operating. Now therefore we can see the very subtle, very instantaneous instances called the consciousness, the vijnana, And then the next level is very much like explained as the chitta, somewhat colored, somewhat conditioned level. And then the mana is the more gross, more conditioned, more vulnerable, which has more potential to create the karma. So that is typically called as the mana. Actually, my explanation is somewhat being taken from most venerable Katakurunda Jnananda Thero. So he has this idea. So how the consciousness and then the chitta and then the mana is explained in the Dhamma. So manasa therefore typically is a kind of a condition level where you have the capacity to do the karma. It has the karmic potential.
Thank you, Bhante. Doesn't look like there's any other questions on our side.
No. Today we don't have any other question. Then if there is no more questions, so we have spent almost 1 hour. And I like to invite Venerable Dhammosada. Are there another question coming from your side? Okay. That's not a question, I think. It's a thumb. Yeah. Okay. I think that person doesn't want to tell anything. Okay. I'll ask Venerable Dhammosada to conduct the sharing of merits.
Asai Bhante. Very fortunate we are to listen to this Dhamma today that exhorts us to practice sense restraint for practicing the three good conducts which are necessary for the development of the four foundations of mindfulness, which is necessary for the development of the bhujangas, the seven factors of enlightenment, and all this so that we can experience dispassion, the cessation of all sankharas, and for the realization of Nibbana. A meritorious deed it is for you to teach and for us to listen, and therefore we would like to extend these merits to our teachers, our parents, all the devas. May our relatives rejoice in these merits. May the devas rejoice in these merits. May all celestial beings protect this Dhamma and the Buddha Sasana for a long time. And may the seeds of Dhamma that we have received continue to grow, producing path, fruition, and Nibbana. Now let us recite the traditional Pali verses for the sharing of merits.
Etavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Etavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Etavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idango nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idango nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idango nyatinam hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punyakammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.